Welcome to the Wednesday edition of Chewing Clock. My name is Dimitri Ravanis.
I'm Tyler McComas.
It has been a while since we have been together, but we are back, and we are back courtesy of the folks at mybookie.ag, the official sponsor of the Armchair Media Network. Go to mybookie, enter the promo code CLOCK at checkout for that $1,000 deposit bonus. College football now 10 days away. Might as well get on it right now and start making your picks, start building your bankroll. And a good way to do that is to get that $1,000 deposit bonus just because you heard about mybookie.ag right here on Chewing Clock. All right, Tyler, so we are in that phase of the college football preseason where everybody is making their bold predictions. Everybody feels like they are ready to go out on a limb and tell you something crazy that absolutely will happen. I thought we'd put a twist a bit on that today and get crazy with the things that we will tell you absolutely will not happen this season. Now, with bold predictions, I got to feel like you're going out on a limb a little bit. So do your choices to you feel like you are getting a little less than safe?
I think all mine are pretty ballsy. I mean, okay. There are some things out there that are already preconceived motions, even though they haven't happened yet. So I kind of went against the grain a little bit, you know, okay. on some of these.
Very good. I tried to do the very same. So let's get started. We have five categories we are going to roll through today. Two for coaches, two for players, but we'll start with the one that is for the whole team. Give me your bold prediction, a team that will not make a bowl game.
They are going to start in the top 15 this year. I think in the Amway coaches poll, they came in at number 11. A&M's not going to a bowl game this year.
This is one that I thought about as well, because they do have a really, really tough schedule this season.
Yeah, I mean, outside South Carolina, I think Texas A&M has the toughest schedule, not in the SEC, but in the entire country. I mean, just think about it. They're going to be an underdog at Clemson. Mm-hmm. They're going to be an underdog at Georgia. They're probably going to be an underdog at LSU, and they're certainly going to be an underdog against Alabama at home. That's a third of the games that you play that, without question, no doubt about it, you are going to be an underdog.
No, that's a good point.
Let's also factor in who Texas A&M is as a program. Let's not act like it's going to be all that shocking if they go on the road and lose in Oxford to a below-average Ole Miss team in mid-October. Let's not act like it's going to be all that surprising if they lose to Mississippi State at home in late October or even South Carolina at home in mid-November. I think Auburn is capable of beating them in September. I know that they've recently had Arkansas's number in Arlington. What I'm saying is I think that those are four guaranteed losses. And if I know Texas A&M like I think I do, those aren't going to be their only four losses. They're going to trip up a couple more times somewhere along the way. And when they're that beat up, I mean, think about that too, is there's a potential for them to be extremely, extremely beat up before they even get to November with the schedule that they have. And if they lose Kellen Mond, I think all bets are off. I think that with all the hype, so there's just some of those schools that when there's hype surrounding a school, they always underachieve. Mm-hmm. And I think that this is A&M's year to go 5-7 and massively, massively, massively underwhelm.
Yeah, look, the team that I feel like is the obvious choice here is a team you already mentioned, which is Auburn, who is right there in that conversation of after South Carolina, who has the toughest schedule in America. But I felt like so many people have picked Auburn, and we already have Gus Malzahn on the hot seat in just about every sort of write-up that you can imagine. So I felt like that one was too obvious. I am also looking at a team that is in the preseason top 25. I'm going to go a little bit lower, not in the top 15, but in the top 20. How about Iowa? They're number 19 in the coaches poll. And I look at their schedule right now, and I'm just going to go ahead and assume four losses. But then at the end of the season, they get a Minnesota team that has become a really hot pick for who could be incredibly improved this offseason, and they get, or this this upcoming season. And then they get a Nebraska team that falls into that same category. Plus, in the middle there, they get an Illinois team that seems like they have transferred in guys from every single top 10 program this offseason. I don't think it's enough to turn Illinois around. But I also don't think that means I don't think Iowa is the kind of team that is so good that you couldn't see an Illinois team with an injection of talent beating them. I think it is very likely that we are looking at a 5-7 team and Kirk Ferentz being urged to pack it up and move on.
it almost feels like they're either going to be 5-7 or somehow figure out a way to be 11-1 and right. late November they're fighting for a spot in the college football playoff. But no, man, I think that if you end up being right on that, I think the Iowa State game early on in the season is going to have to be a massive speed bump for them, which I don't think is out of the question. It's in Ames. Iowa State fans are more optimistic than probably they've ever been heading into a year. If they lose that Iowa State game, then maybe you start to see the wheels fall off a little bit in the month of September.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's very possible. I think that at least on the defensive side of the ball, I know the Cyclones have to replace a lot offensively, but on the defensive side of the ball, I don't think there is anything significant about the Hawkeyes that makes me think, or and I should say anything significant about the Hawkeyes offense that makes me think Iowa State's going to have a lot of problems in that game.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. Nebraska should be a whole heck of a lot better. I think Purdue's got a chance to be good. We'll see about Wisconsin. I believe they got to play Penn State in there as well at home.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, let's not act like Iowa has the talent level of a 10-win team. Do they have a schedule of a 9-win team? Well, possibly. But who stands out for Iowa this year? I don't know that answer. I don't think Kirk Ferentz knows that answer.
Does Ricky Stanzi still have eligibility left? He's the only one I could think of.
I think he's coming back for his 12th year now. So I think old Rick's back.
All right, the next one, a bold prediction that will not happen. How about the coach currently on the hot seat that we don't think will get fired? I'm going to go first this one. Again, I feel like Gus Malzahn is too obvious the answer because he is definitely on a hot seat and also has a top 15 preseason team. So I feel like that's the obvious answer. How about Chris Ash at Rutgers? I don't think that he is going to turn things around significantly. I just think that Rutgers is going to get down to this do or die moment. They have Ash signed through 2022, and they're not going to want to pay the buyout for what is ultimately a losing cause.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that you have to just accept who you are, but at this given time period, you have to ask yourself, okay, if we fire this guy, one, who are we going to get? And two, do we even have a culture to where we can turn this thing around right now?
Yeah, well, see,
it's almost worth it
to
Rutgers if they just stay pat. Almost.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. I think, who are they going to get? I mean, they're going to bring Greg Schiano back, and Greg Schiano will be there if they wait till 2021 to make this move. You're right. I don't think this is Rutgers accepting that they will never be good in the Big Ten East, but I think they have to accept that the window is pretty tightly shut right now.
Yeah, I mean, it is, and there's not going to be a whole lot of people lined up to take that job. Rutgers needs stability is what they need. They don't need to be changing head coaches every 2 to 3 years or anything like that. They need stability and a guy that's going to be there and a guy that's going to commit to them. So, I think it's the best thing for them. We'll see how the season plays out. I can argue Gus Malzahn. I can try and do that just from the aspect that I think that they have a chance to be maybe sneaky good at quarterback this year. I don't think that they're going to have Cam Newton, and I don't think that they're going to run into a Nick Marshall situation or anything like that. But I think they've got a chance to be sneaky good. And the one thing about a tough schedule, the advantage to it, is you do have opportunities to pull off marquee wins. I think that Gus Malzahn, that buyout is still a huge number.
Mm-hmm.
But I think maybe Auburn could be a little bit better than people are thinking. I think that they beat Oregon to open up the season on the second Saturday of the year. I think that they're going to spring an upset somewhere. Maybe at Florida. Maybe at LSU. Maybe Georgia at home this year. They're going to win one or two marquee games, maybe even three, to where they end up 8-4 at the end of the season. And you can justify that 8-4, 9-3 year because, God, how did they have two or three wins over top 10 teams at the end of the year? How'd they do that? How'd Auburn do that?
Interesting. Yeah, see, I think that if it is another 8-4 season, I know Tiger fans are so sick of Malzahn finishing 8-4, but I think you're going to have the conversation of, well, which four? Because if the eight, or maybe the conversation is which eight, right? Because if the eight includes some combination of Alabama, Georgia, and LSU, and I'll throw Oregon in there too, I think you have to... talk about, is this 8-4 like the disappointing 8-4s we've seen in the past?
Yeah.
All right. How about another one that we think won't happen? We'll keep with the coaches. The superstar coach, the rising star coach that we don't think is going to have a new gig at the end of the 2019 season.
I really think that Lane Kiffin's star has faded significantly just after last year. And I think that that star is going to continue to fade again this year. I mean, there may not be a coach out there that could benefit from a week one game quite like Lane Kiffin. And I feel like it's going to swing one way or the other because it's not a great opening slate. And I think Ohio State and FAU are on Fox at 11 a.m., so they're going to get a lot of eyeballs. But if they get their ass kicked like they did in Norman last year, I think everybody's just going to write off that FAU team for the year. If Ohio State wins like 56-7, something like that, the entire country's going to say, it's same old FAU. FAU is last year. They'll struggle to even make it to a bowl game this year. Everybody's attention will be turned away from them. And I think that Lane Kiffin's going to have a really tough time at the end of the year finding another job somewhere else, whether it be in the SEC or any other Power 5 job.
See, I don't agree that Ohio State could be what knocks Lane out of conversation for these other jobs. Because who was it their first year that they opened up with? Lane's first year at FAU, was it Navy? And like he just could not get that offense moving at all in that game. I think what is going to sour people on Lane is, what if Butch Davis gets FIU so far ahead of FAU? What if we're talking about the Owls going, say, 7-5 and the Panthers winning Conference USA? I think that's when we start to talk about or completely dismiss Lane Kiffin's success in year one as a product of Kendall Briles.
Yeah, at a similar job, too. Maybe even a lesser job to some degree. So,
right.
Yeah. I just think if people are going to pay attention to FAU this year, you might tune them out if they just absolutely get destroyed at Ohio State and say, there's not that we think that they're going to win the game or can win the game. It's just, they're bad again. I guess I'll check in with Lane Kiffin in December and see if he's in a bowl game or not.
All right. So I had written down Mike Norvell at Memphis, but I'm going to pivot because I've been sort of wrestling with this one. I feel like we have covered over and over again the fact that Norvell is just not a very well-liked guy, and that is always going to stand in his way, no matter how good he has the Tigers being. What about Jeff Brohm? Like, I could see, even if Purdue takes a big step forward this year, and I'm not talking about Big Ten championship game, let's just say 8 wins, right? 8 wins at a better bowl game than they got last year in the Music City Bowl. Well, it was like a foregone conclusion Auburn was going to fire Malzahn for Brohm. And then Brohm got run over by Malzahn in the Music City Bowl. Brohm did not leave for Louisville. I don't know what that job is that is going to get him out of what is not his hometown, but an area he's very comfortable in. And I don't know what the big name job is that's going to come knocking for.
I mean, Ole Miss got a chance to be open. I don't think that he would leave to go to Ole Miss. I mean, why?
Yeah, you're leaving Purdue for Purdue in that case.
Yeah, that's what I was just about to say. You're leaving for the exact same job and a tougher conference at that point. So, I mean, and if he's smart, and I think he is, he's got to see an opportunity here. He's got to see that this ain't the same old Wisconsin from 8 years ago. You know, maybe Nebraska's got a chance to be on the come up, but there's a lot to still be proved there. Well, the point is, Purdue could, year in and year out, really contend for a Big Ten title games, Big Ten championship games, if he's smart and stays there and builds that program according to, because there's just not, I mean, I think he's in the worst division in all of college football. And there's a chance to exceed there and really win 8 or 9 games every single year. And God, at the end of the day, be one of the most winning coach that the Purdue Boilermakers have ever had.
Yeah, no, I think it is a possibility. I also think that it's probably year 4. That we're starting to sort of look at Purdue and go, okay, what is the expiration date of what Jeff Brohm has done? So I think he's got 2 more seasons before we start to wonder, well, why hasn't he made the jump yet? All right, how about we go with freshmen we don't expect to see on the field this year? The highly touted freshman we don't think is going to crack someone's not even starting lineup, but a serious spot in their rotation. And to me, this is a pretty obvious one. A guy that 247 has listed as a 5-star dude, Marcel Brooks, the right now I'm just going to call him the defensive player that signed at LSU, because since he got on campus at Baton Rouge, they can't decide if he's a linebacker or a safety. And I don't think there is a shortage of talent at either of those positions at LSU. I just don't see Brooks getting on the field this year. It might be smart for Coach O to try and talk this kid into a redshirt.
Yeah, probably so. I mean, you're exactly right about that. They are DBU, and there's going to be talent at that position. And they're not necessarily linebacker you, but they always have a ton of athleticism and speed at that spot.
Right.
So if you can't figure out what you're going to play this late in training camp, then that means you're probably not getting first team reps with either of those groups. So the best thing is, yes, well, let's redshirt him. Let's get him in the weight program and let's reevaluate things in the winter and see where we want to commit this kid full time in terms of position. But if you can't figure out where you want him to play, I mean, the only situation where he would get on the field is if you're in some sort of a dire situation with injuries.
Right. Right. I had one time I had a defensive coach in college football tell me that if you have a kid in this situation, you can't decide if he is a outside linebacker or a safety, that the best case scenario is he hits hard, but he is too small to make a serious impact. The worst case scenario is he is too weak to play linebacker and too slow to play safety. I don't think that's Marcel Brooks' problem. I just don't think he's established himself in one side or the other, and there's no need to rush him to establish himself. Let him tell you what he is. You've got time.
So Spencer Rattler is the number one quarterback coming out of high school. I mean, I think it's pretty obvious that he's not going to play this year. It's going to be Jalen Hurts. So I'm going to go with a guy that was also really highly recruited, but already has been highly publicized. I don't think Brew McCoy is going to have much of an impact at all at USC this year. He really hasn't even practiced up to this point.
Yeah.
He's been out all summer long. It's been a weird, kind of a strange situation. People are trying to figure out what's going on. Is he sick? What's up? I mean, this is just another saga for Brew McCoy that I'm not ready to say right now that he's going to be a disappointment at SC, but certainly things haven't gotten off to the right foot. I don't think that we're going to see Brew McCoy at all, at least until the year 2020.
Yeah, I would agree with that, because I think in addition to getting healthy and getting up to speed on the playbook, there is the matter of rebuilding trust with that team that you can't. I mean, there's just no reasonable way to do in a summer.
Yeah, I mean, like leaving once and then coming back to that school, it's kind of like he's gonna have a long way to go. He's gonna have a long way to go to earn that trust back. And I'm sure some of those guys, or a lot of those guys on his team, maybe grew up around him, grew up playing against him, and know what kind of dude he is. But come on, when you transfer like that twice, when you pick a school, transfer, and then transfer again, it's kind of like, all right, this dude's got to prove it to me before I'm all in on him. And I think that that's not only the players, I think that's probably the coaching staff too.
All right, how about the transfer that has been highly touted that we don't expect to see on the field in 2019?
Well, Tate Martell.
Not as a starter.
Right, like Tate Martell clearly is already that guy.
Right.
Now, I don't know if Nick Starkle is a big name per se, but I don't think that he's going to start at Arkansas, and I'm not sure how much he's going to see the field. I think that he's always kind of been an overrated player. I think Ben Hicks is eventually going to win that job at Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
Again, he's not to the level of Tate Martell or Justin Fields or Jalen Hurts, but I think he's the one guy, or at least the one guy that hasn't been announced yet, that is not going to be a factor this year.
Is Hicks the one that transferred in from SMU?
I believe that is the case, yes.
Yeah, I mean, like you would think
SME grad transfer.
Yeah, so he understands the playbook that Chad Morris is running already. Like you would think that in practice, he already has a leg up there. Yeah, Starkle to me has been disappointing everywhere he's been. The interesting thing about this, or what made it a high-profile transfer, is he's transferring within the conference, within the division even.
Which is strange. He's transferring. And A&M, my God, they're sold on Kellen Mond. I mean, and maybe they should be. I think I need to see a little bit more out of him. But he's not only transferring within the division, he's transferring to a team that, God, since they've entered the SEC, has just owned Arkansas. And I could say that for anybody. I realize that.
Right.
Everybody's owned Arkansas in the SEC recently. But it's certainly been A&M, and there's been a lot of excruciating late-game losses against the Aggies in Arlington.
Yeah. Bubba Bolden transferred from USC to Miami. He is a former four-star recruit at safety. And look, Bolden is going against a guy for that free safety role. His first name is Gerval. I cannot remember what his last name is to save my life. But the difference between Bolden and this other kid, Gerval, is that Gerval was recruited by Manny Diaz because Manny Diaz saw so much in common with his skill set and Manny Diaz's defensive playbook. I think Bubba Bolden probably is looked at as the more talented of the two, but we're at a point now, and we're going to start to see this with a lot of positions at a lot of schools over the next couple of weeks, where if there is not major separation, I think through week one, you are probably going to see both get significant playing time. And when that is the case, my gut always defaults to the guy that has been exposed to the system for longer. So whether that is Ben Hicks running Chad Morris's offense at SMU and now transferring into Arkansas, or whether that is Gerval being a Manny Diaz guy from the jump versus Bubba Bolden, who's only been on campus through the summer, I think that makes a big difference.
We need a guy like Bubba Bolden to be a star in college football, by the way. When you've got that type of name, you've got to be able to get on the field.
Do you realize he is one of two potential starting Bubbas at the U this year?
No, I have no idea.
Their place kicker, Bubba Braxa, also on the roster there.
That's the one name that I've really never understood. And Oklahoma's not a southern state per se, but I feel like there's a whole lot of Bubbas in the South. But I did grow up around a Bubba. I just said, out of all the names that you've had to pick from, you chose something that he's probably going to be called anyway by his siblings, which I, right. I just never understood.
What is the William to Bubba's Billy? Like, what is it? What is it a nickname?
Bub? No, just Bub for short.
His Christian name is Bub.
There's not a whole lot of things you can do to spice that one up.
All right, that is where we are going to put a pin in it today. Again, go to mybookie.ag and enter the promo code CLOCK at checkout to get that $1,000 deposit bonus. We will be back with you with another show tomorrow. He is Tyler McComas. I'm Demetri Ivanis. Thanks for hanging out with us on today's episode of Chewing Clock.